You're listening to a podcast from the Cinema Geekly Podcast Network. We're the geeks you deserve and the ones you need right now.
Welcome to Level Your Gear, Cinema Geekly's gaming podcast. It is Anthony and Aurora, and we are back for the month of October 2023 to talk a little bit of video game news and reviews. We both have some completed video games. I think these are all late reviews, but that doesn't matter. That's how we do it here.
Yes.
We're not those professional gaming review websites where you only play 10 hours and then talk about, like, that's your final review of the game. We play through the whole game, and it takes us forever to do it. Yes. But then we talk about it. I do have a partial review.
We're parents, people. So.
Yeah, yes. There'll be a podcast about that eventually, too. Keep your eyes and ears out for that.
Yes.
But, yeah, and I do have a bit of a partial review in place, because I do want to talk about Starfield a little bit. Before we dive into the reviews real quick, there is some news, kind of big news in the gaming industry. Now, there's definitely been some stuff about, like, there's been, like, a state of play. There's been a few other things where there's been some, like, game stuff released and some things being announced. But none of that, quite frankly, is quite as big as SAG-AFTRA authorizing a strike against video game companies. They are currently still on the Writers Guild strike. Has thankfully ended, but they are still supporting the actors' strike, which is still ongoing, and they voted overwhelmingly. They cast 34,687 ballots, and 98.32% of them voted in favor of authorizing the strike against gaming companies. SAG-AFTRA president Fran Drescher. Everybody remember Fran Drescher? From the nanny. She's the president of SAG. And she says it's time for video game companies to stop playing games. Wow, look at that wordplay.
Ooh.
And get serious about reaching an agreement on this contract. Was the pun necessary?
I mean, I say yes.
I know they're actors. But they have to add the dramatic flair. A strike authorization doesn't necessarily mean voice and performance actors working on games will stop working, but it does allow the union to call for a strike if it feels negotiations aren't going anywhere. So they've authorized a strike. They have not gone on strike. So that's an important thing to demarcate. There's no strike happening, but they have authorized one. They're at the negotiating table right now with companies, and if they aren't seeing eye to eye on a new contract, they can go on strike. So it hasn't happened. It hasn't happened yet. The union is calling for stuff actually pretty similar to what's happening with the Hollywood studios. They're calling for a retroactive 11% wage increase, on-set medics for hazardous performance capture, and protections against the use of generative AI to replace working actors, which is all pretty similar to what's happening with the Hollywood studios. 10 gaming firms impacted by the strike include Activision, Blind Light, Disney Character Voices, Electronic Arts, Epic Games, Formosa Interactive, Insomniac Games, Take-Two Productions, Voicework Productions, Inc., and WB Games. So that kind of covers a lot of the gaming industry.
It does.
Just in there. I think people, like, here, like, they just hear Activision and they don't realize what Activision covers, which is tons.
A lot. Yeah.
Tons and tons. WB, Disney, like, so many big gaming firms are kind of in here. So, a representative for the gaming companies, Audrey Cooling, says, "We will continue to negotiate in good faith to reach an agreement that reflects the important contributions of SAG-AFTRA represented performers in video games. We have reached tentative agreements on over half of the proposals and are optimistic we can find a resolution at the bargaining table." And I feel like I don't know if we're going to actually see a strike. I hope not. I mean, Like, I hope they don't have to. If they have to, absolutely do it. But I feel like we're not going to get one here. And I think it's because of the differences between the movie and game industries. While it does take time to make a movie, it doesn't take nearly as much time as it does to make a game.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And I'm thinking about like an act, like a performance, like actor strike for games is going to put a giant delay on a lot of games. And those games already take a really long time to produce. So I feel like they are going to work. I don't feel like we're going to get a strike. I think they're going to put together a deal. But I think this is a good idea by them to authorize one.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
Because it's sending the message. It's like, we'll do it. Like, and we're overwhelmingly in favor. Like, way in favor of it. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm glad they're doing it, because I feel like sometimes people forget, like, you when you play a video game, you're just so like into the gameplay that you forget all the things that went into making that game, and that includes, you know, all the actors that had to work on it. So I'm glad that they are getting acknowledged too.
Yeah. Okay, so I recently completed at least the main story quest for Star Wars Jedi Survivor, which is the follow-up to Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. And I think you played Fallen Order, did you not? I don't remember.
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Nope.
I think you'd like it.
Okay.
It's been a while since Star Wars put out like a third-person action set-piece game that, like, you walk through and there's a story and there's character. Like, they tried to do it a little bit with the second Battlefront game. The first Battlefront game was just multiplayer. The second Battlefront game had a bit of a story campaign that you could play through, and it was okay. But Jedi Fallen Order was the first Star Wars game they made where there's all it is a single-player, story-driven action game. And it was excellent. Amazing, amazing cast, amazing gameplay, fantastic story. In fact, I played it a second time before the sequel came out. The sequel is even bigger in the sense that you do get to travel to a lot of planets, which are kind of like not open world, but open. They're kind of more like open level, with the exception of kind of like the home planet that you sort of settle your base of operations on. That is an open world. So you get one open world and then a bunch of open level planets that you end up kind of going to. It's a huge game. It's PS5 exclusive, so there's no PS4 version of it. It couldn't run on the PS4. So it's much, much bigger. They added all sorts of fantastic things to the like the combat. They didn't alter anything in a way that made the game different. It's still very much the same game as the first in that sense, but they just added things on top of it that made it even better, more satisfying. The story is pretty good. I didn't find it as compelling as the first, but then there's kind of an addendum to the main story that you sort of play out afterwards, which is also very cool. And in both games, you get to fight Darth Vader twice. And those are excellent and super fun. Somehow you don't die in either of them. I'm amazed. He seems kind of not incompetent, but you figure like, oh, man, you die for sure in that battle. But you don't either time. You sort of escape by the slightest margin. But they are... both of those games are excellent. This one, I think, is probably right on par with the first game. Maybe a little bit ahead. The only thing I haven't done a ton of the side quests, and most of the side quests are contained to the open world portion that you're on. Like, there's just, you hear lots of rumors, you go to these places, you scope it out. You rescue people, you find things, you solve puzzle rooms, stuff like that. It's there's a lot of fun side quests. I just haven't gone through and done all of them, but I've done some of them, and I've completely played through the main story and
nice.
It's just a fun game. Everything is customized. They had a couple of customization options in the first game. Like you can customize your lightsaber, how it looks, like the color of your blade and all of that stuff. And it's even deeper in this, and you get a blaster in this one. You can customize all the parts. Your tiny little robot, BD-1, who follows you everywhere, you can customize his pieces and parts and colors. And your character, Cal Kestis, you can now also change, like, all of his clothes and hairs. You can just find hairstyles. In fact, a thing that became a meme really quickly is you can just give him, like, a complete hillbilly look. Like, mutton chop facial hair and, like, a mullet. And people were just, like, playing America Fuck Yeah in the background and, like, lightsabering down
of
people.
Course.
Yeah.
Of course they did.
Of Why course not? They did. I'm like, I don't know if this is in the spirit of the game, guys. But, like, I watch that stuff and I'm, like, the least fun game player of all time. I'm like, I would never do that. That's not what, like, a Star Wars person would do. But
yeah. Not if you're a rebel.
No. Yeah. It's really fun. I would say maybe a soft 4.5, but definitely like a strong 4.25. Like a really good game. If you love Star Wars, especially if you love single player games, and like third person single player games like I do, this is like a must play. Absolutely excellent. Yes. Aurora, what is the game that you played and finished?
Mm-hmm. So I played the Resident Evil 4 remake.
Yeah.
I am a huge Resident Evil fan.
Mm-hmm.
I have Nemesis tattooed on my body.
That's yep.
So much. I love Resident Evil. Mm-hmm. So I was really excited for this remake because Resident Evil 4 is not my favorite Resident Evil game, okay. But it's one of my favorites, and it holds a very special place in my heart because I played Resident Evil 4 multiple times with my siblings, and it became kind of like a bonding experience with us. We will all sit down and they will like watch me play, and we will laugh at the one-liners and you know, all the game is unintentionally funny.
Okay.
So,
you're selling
and
me.
It is one of the it's a game that has people speaking in Spanish, and I, you know, I'm a native Spanish speaker, so
of course.
Listening people, you know, zombies in Resident Evil say one-liners in Spanish that are just hilarious. It's good memories for me.
Do they do it in zombie voices?
Well, the thing is that in Resident Evil 4, the people that are zombies are actually kind of more like controlled by the virus.
Oh, okay.
So it's not like RE1 zombies. It's gotcha. More people that are kind of like brainwashed in a way.
Gotcha. So you don't have like moaning, like
right,
guttural.
Right. So it's more. There are, you know, other versions of the zombies later in the game, but at the beginning you kind of like find people in this village and they are just like acting weird.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a Spanish speaking place. So all these lines that they say are like, you know, insults in Spanish to Leon. And it's just very funny. But I was kind of concerned for this remake because I think that the original game is perfect.
Okay.
It's just perfection. I played that game multiple times, even after years and years that it was released, and it held up.
Okay, so I have a question. Is this then similar to, because I haven't played Resident Evil 2 remake, but I heard that they kind of like retool the story in that game a little bit.
Yeah.
They do the same here?
They did.
Okay.
They did. But like Resident Evil 2 remake, they kept the story pretty similar, and the things that they changed just enhanced it.
Oh, that's perfect.
They did such a good job in Resident Evil 2 Remake and in this game to make the story better. One of the things that I kind of like dreaded in the original Resident Evil 4 was the whole storyline. Leon has to rescue the president's daughter. The president's daughter has been kidnapped by these people in this village.
Okay.
And it's kind of an island where they're at. And Leon goes in, you know, to rescue the president's daughter, and at some point, about half through the game, you rescue her, and she becomes your companion.
Okay.
And in the original game, she was annoying. She was very annoying. Mm-hmm. She would get grabbed by the bad guys all the time, and you know, you're kind of like fighting the the people, and then you know, she gets grabbed and taken away, and you have to go, you know, behind her and like attack the guy, and it's just it becomes very chaotic. Mm-hmm. And in this game, I feel like she was still annoying, but I think they did a good job to make it better.
Okay.
They had an area where you actually played as her.
Yeah.
And it was without weapons. Mm-hmm. And it was really, I think it was one of the creepiest part of the game, and I really enjoyed it.
Yes.
So I think that they did things to make the experience escorting her better and more fun.
Okay.
And I also remember certain boss fights and certain things that happened in the game that when I was approaching that in the remake, I was like, oh my God, there's this part is super annoying. I'm going to have to go through this boss fight. And then it turned out that they made it more fun and better.
Ah, that's so much cooler.
So I really, really, really liked the remake.
Okay.
And I think it's a good sign that I finished it and immediately I was like, I want to play it again.
Yeah.
That's because awesome. You get, you know, collectibles, and you in the Resident Evil games you get like ranked after you play the game. I got a B, which I'm very upset about. So
not happy, not good enough.
I have to go for the S plus rank.
Wow.
Now. So I wanna play it again, get all the, you know, collectibles that I missed, and the fact that I'm eager to play it immediately after I finished it, is a good sign that the game was perfection.
Okay.
So I think it's obvious that I'm going to give it a 5.
Wow. All right. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was super good. I had a lot of fun playing it.
It sounds really similar to The Last of Us TV show, where they changed some story elements, but largely it was stuff to service everything, and it kind of made it fit or work better. Yep. And that's like the best you can hope for when it comes to like a remake, when they're retooling the story. Like, I'm curious to see the second part of Final Fantasy VII Remake is coming out soon, I think sometime next year. And I love the first part of that, but it's completely retooling and retelling the story from that game. Like, in a completely different way than, like, Resi 4 is. Like, this is like a top-to-bottom different story with just some similar beats in it. But like that sort of stuff is super interesting to me. Okay. So, I have a partial review for Starfield. I would encourage you, I know Aurora, you're upset that it's not available on PS5, but, I would highly recommend grabbing it on Steam unless you're going to buy an Xbox. But if you're not going to do that, I highly recommend picking it up on Steam and playing it. So I am about 15 to 20 hours into Starfield now, which I did not think I was going to get that far into it, because the moment I learned that your main character doesn't have any speaking dialogue lines, which is apparently, hello, my introduction to Bethesda games. I guess most of them, the main character doesn't speak. I think they did it in one game and everyone was like, boo, why'd you do that?
Yep.
And I'm the opposite. I'm like, boo, why doesn't my character have a voice? For the most part, it is still a thing that irks me. I think I would much rather have a voice because I would feel more connected to the character. I hate the idea of like, I'm the character, because it's like, no, I'm super boring. Like, give me a character and then I can pretend to be that person. Like, that's what I want. I don't want to inject me into the character. That's dull.
That's interesting. I'm the opposite, actually.
No, it's super dull. Like, my imagination is so bad. It's like, I can't be this guy. It doesn't help that I didn't realize exactly how serious the story was going to be. And at the beginning, you can just pick a name for your person. And I'm like, what's a bad sci-fi name? And I'm like, Cade Laser. So my name is Cade Laser.
Love it.
And every now and again, I'm just like, hi, I'm Cade Laser. I'm from a really bad sci-fi serial comic book from the 50s. And that being said,
I imagine this character with like a scar on his face, like on his eye.
Actually, the funny thing is, he looks like a 20 something with blue hair.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, he's like fresh out of high school. This kid, I don't know. I'm sending all sorts of mixed signals with him.
Now I have a different view.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of stubble and some blue hair. I don't know what's going on with him. He keeps his helmet on most of the time. But I do love that you can play in third person. There's actually three different viewpoints. You can do a tight third person and an even further away third person, and you can do first person. The story. Let me just say, like, the actual story, the core story of, like, this mystery and what you find in the end. If you're familiar with the story, the main core story for No Man's Sky, it is basically the same exact story. That being said, it is a billion times more interesting than the No Man's Sky version. And even though I am playing on an Xbox Series S, so I am not playing it on, like, the best possible graphics, because that would be the X or a high-end PC. It still looks incredible. I'm never gonna ever get tired of sitting down in my ship and taking off. Like, you can fast travel to all of these locations and stuff, but I still prefer to walk into my ship, sit down in my chair, and like manually take off and shoot into space.
Nice.
And like warp to places. Like, that's still tons of fun. The story is great. The gameplay is really good. I think I've only encountered like what could even be called a bug like twice, and they were both really just really fun. Like, I shot somebody and they went flying.
That sounds like a Bethesda game.
Yeah, like I shot somebody and they just went flying.
Awesome.
I was like, that's awesome. It wasn't like, I'm sure that broke the physics engine for a second, but I don't care. That looked cool. But other than that, like, no game breaking issues, like nobody getting stuck in anything, like nothing like that. The characters that you get or you can add to your team, they're fun. There's a million things to do. Inventory can be a little boggy. Like, there's a lot of inventory management and the menus like aren't the greatest in the world, but it's not terrible. Just tons, boatloads of character options, of side quests. Just, you know, if you've ever played a Bethesda game, it's like that. It's just that in space. Just tons and tons and tons of stuff. So much to cover and not enough time. But it is, so far, about 15 to 20 hours into the main story, really good, surprisingly better. Like, I'm giving it like a tentative 4, but like a really solid 4. And I'm waiting to see how the rest of it plays out story-wise, and I want to do some of the side quests, because I've heard there's some, like, really notable side quests, and I guess in sticking with Bethesda tradition, a couple of them are, like, the best things in the game. There's a couple of side quests that are, like, better than the main story or whatever, so I want to try those out and go down those routes as well. And, yeah, I just feel like this is right down your alley, and I know there's some like Bethesda purists or whatever who are like, it's not better than the best Fallout, or it's not better than Skyrim at its best. And I can't attest to that, having never played any of those games. This is my first time ever playing a Bethesda game. And I thought I was going to hate it, and I thought I was going to be super intimidated by it. And I am still intimidated a little bit, and I am bothered by a couple of the things in the game, for the most part, I'm really enjoying it way more than I thought I was going to. So
another
recommendation. I'm looking forward to next month. I'm hoping to have the game, or at least the main story, finished by then, but like some of the other parts of it dug into as well. But I'm looking forward to giving a full review next month. And I'm also
hopefully I can get like a partial review. You convinced me to buy it on Steam.
See, good. Look at that. You're welcome, Microsoft and Bethesda. I would like my commission check, please, mailed to cinemageekly@gmail.com. Just send that there, and I'll be happy to accept any and all payments going forward from sales that I may have contributed to. And I'm looking forward to, I've already pre-ordered the Amazing Spider-Man 2 sequel on PS5. Mm-hmm. I am looking for, that hasn't come out yet. It comes out in a little bit, but I'm looking forward to digging into that too. So maybe that'll be a partial or full review next month as well. But I'm excited to start diving into all of those things. So, I guess that's the podcast for this month, mm-hmm. everybody. But keep tuning in. We'll be back in November. But in the meantime, you can head on over to cinemageekly.com or you can check out the archives of the show. This is a listener-supported podcast. There are a couple ways to help out there. If you'd like, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/cinemageekly. The merch store, geeklymerch.com. Links for those are in the show notes for this episode. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Audible. Just search for Level Your Gear, hit subscribe, and that way you can join us in November for more gaming news and reviews.